Okay, welcome to episode 8 of the Alexis L podcast. And we've got a special guest to join in with the banter with the Alexis L morning crew, afternoon, evening crew. It's Sami Abuwade.
Hello. How are we doing, guys?
Hello.
Good, thank you. It's Arabs 2, Jews 1 on the Alexis L podcast.
In the league tables.
Yeah, yeah. Welcome, Sami. What? Just that. What?
No, Abu Warda. That's my surname.
Abu Warda. Sami Abu Warda. That's what I said, wasn't it? Sami Abu what? No, what?
I've had Abu Ward round. I've had it misspelt as Abs Warden. I've had everything.
Abu Wardrobe.
Wardrobe. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Wardrobe.
So what's
I used to get, because I'm Talal Karkuti, they used to say Karbuti, Halal a lot. And then one guy really cleverly went Talal, and he kept saying my name. He went Talal, 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 Towelhead. Looking me dead in the eye in the school playground. Just
that's creative.
Slowly like transforming that. My name to Towel. I had to give him credit. It was yeah. Really funny.
This was on The World at One. on Radio 4. It was a bit controversial. Sammy, so what's going on with you, brother?
Been very busy. I watched the Diddy doc a couple of days ago. That was a pretty big event.
Ken Dodd and his Diddy men.
That's the one. That's the one. You've seen it too.
Exactly. In the Jambutty minds, it's a example of sexual shenanigans in Naughty Ash.
So what, Ken Dodd had something called the Diddy Men?
Yes, I'm forgetting that you're younger than me. Yeah.
I know Ken Dodd. I love Ken Dodd. I don't know about the Diddy Men. Tell me about the Diddy Men.
Well, his kind of posse were called the Diddy Men.
Oh, my God.
I think they lived with him in Naughty Ash and worked down the Jambutty mines. I don't know whether they came on...
They were little bucktooth puppets with big top hats.
Yeah. So essentially Diddy or Small in Liverpool vernacular.
Yeah.
Versions of him, really. They're puppets, were they?
They are like clownish minstrel-like puppets.
Yeah.
Short and squat.
Yeah.
With big pot bellies.
Yeah. But obviously that wasn't really, I was just...
No, that's what the new Netflix documentary is, yes.
About Ken Dodd and his Diddy Men.
Ken Dodd and his Diddy Men. Have you ever seen Ken Dodd?
Sean Coombs.
Sean Puffy
No,
Coombs.
I never saw him. I never really fancied it that... Really? Just that people say, you know, you'd go on for 3 hours and you'd help us with laughter. I can't imagine it, really.
You never saw him live?
No.
Have you ever seen, like, an extended recorded set of his? Have you ever watched him?
I don't think so, no.
It's pretty like good.
He's like a shit.
Are you kidding me?
Dr. Dre.
No.
Speak highly of him.
He's really good.
He had a Radio 4 when it was still, I don't know whether it was called Radio 4 or the home service. He had a sort of Sunday lunchtime was the big time for really popular comedies on Radio 4, in the 50s and 60s. And he had his own show.
Oh, I thought.
And he'd say, oh, what a lovely day to stuff a blancmange through somebody's door and shout the Martians are coming, something like that. And he'd also had a catchphrase, which was "Where's me shit? Where's me shit?" Which you got to, it's a good catchphrase. Where's me shit?
What's your catchphrase, Alexi?
Well, catchphrase is "Death to the Zionist entity."
how does that go down when you? Ten.
No, but he does it with a wig and a silly voice.
Yeah.
What about Ken Dodd?
Well, Ken Dodd, of course, was How You Diddling as well, which I named for How You Sean Coombs Diddling, he used to say.
See, I thought we'd switched to P. Diddy. That's why I said he was shit. I thought we were talking about P. Diddy.
Oh, right. No, we're still talking about Ken Dodd.
Was there a bit of Ken Dodd in, you know, your geezer?
Bobby Chariot. Yeah. How You Diddling was stolen from...
Yeah, you said How You Diddling. I thought I recognised
it. Yeah. Yeah, it was stolen from Ken Dodd.
Do you want to know the names of the Diddy men?
Oh, they had names, yeah. Yeah.
Dickie Mint.
All right.
Mick the Marmalizer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Marmalized is a Liverpool expression for
what does it mean to get marmalized?
Beaten up, really.
So Mick goes around. Okay, he's the tough one, I guess. Stephen Titch Doyle, Little Evan, Hamish McDiddy.
McDiddy.
McDiddy. Nigel Ponsonby, Small Piece. Nicky Nugget. So this one's very rude. Ben Tiny Ween Winston.
How many of them were? How many of the
two more?
Were there? All right.
Sid Short.
Just about 20 or 30 more.
And Smarty Artie.
And so that's Sean Coombs' crew,
yeah,
is it?
Posse, yeah, let's
entourage.
That's Puff Daddy's entourage, is it?
Let's drop the. I'm not really. I'm more familiar with Ken Dodd than I am with P. Diddy, really, because he was after, I think he was after my time as a somebody who was interested in music, and he was. Whose big name was he?
I followed the sort of late 90s, early 2000s hip hop and gangster rap somewhat casually, but I was aware of what was going on. And Sean Coombs just kind of appeared as an artist, sort of Puff Daddy. And you don't really question these things. You just go, oh, he's a rapper, you know, because I wasn't that in on the gossip. Yeah. And so this documentary has told me what's what in many ways, and it's revealed him for being extremely untalented.
Really? Oh, right.
Quite a funny way, but nothing else that he does is funny. Unfortunately, it's pretty awful.
How did he get to musical notoriety then? If he was untalented, did he?
Well, apparently he started as a producer and inserting himself into people's songs and music videos. And the documentary heavily implies that on more than one occasion he used the deaths of other people to escalate his own career, and that's not a good thing.
That's not a nice thing to do, is it? Really?
No.
He sampled your best mate when Notorious B.I.G. died.
Which of my best mates?
That you used that Sting sample.
Oh right.
Every breath you take. And that was a big hit for him. Was that a
Mikey
B.I.G. hit?
I once got stranded my plane had to land in bad weather in the southeast of England, southwest of England, and we had to all go to a hotel, and there was a woman claiming to be Sting's sister-in-law there. She got very drunk and then told us very inappropriately intimate details about her personal life.
Mm-hmm.
Which was strange. So you know Sting then, Alexi?
I'm friendly with his first wife more than anything. I did briefly.
He used to be Sting's court jester.
I was his court jester for a brief period.
What does that mean? You go around his
just
house?
Just hang around his house and be funny.
That's nice.
Didn't last very long. But I'm still friendly with his wife, Frances. Mother.
Oh, nice, nice.
First two children.
Diddy also, like, he made some really fucking catchy beats as a producer, like some of the biggest hip hop tunes, but it was really basic producing. Like, he would just take a really popular, a well known funk song and just loop like the best bit of that song,
right?
And that's how he made his name, really. So it wasn't very creative, but he wasn't a bad lyricist, he had some good lyrics, we are the Diddy men, Doddy's Dotty Diddy men. We are the Diddy men who come from Naughty Ash. Tonight's the night the Diddy men paint the town. We'll lose our blues and let our Diddy hair down. So some pretty good fucking lyrics.
Good.
To be honest, if a competent rapper rapped that, I think it would sound sick.
Yeah, I think we're onto something here.
do you want to give it a go?
Act first and ask permission later, because I did my song, play that funky music, Jewish Boy.
Mm-hmm.
I did it first and asked for permission later, and so I have to give all the royalties for that to the band Wild Cherry, who did the song, play that funky music, White Boy.
What's interesting is when, and also your theme song was a ripoff of the Mickey Mouse Club theme song.
Yeah, we got away with that for some reason.
And the BBC lawyers said to you, don't worry about fucking Disney, we're the BBC.
No, they said, fuck Disney, we're the BBC. Yeah,
and
it wasn't
they're pretty much doing that to Trump now, aren't they?
Well, yeah, you
with Trump's lawsuit, they're basically saying, we're not going to entertain it.
Yeah, they should have done that more frequently. Oh, yes, well, as I understand it. You know, he hasn't really got a case. You know, there's not really anything. I don't know why he's doing it, really. I mean, one of the odd things about that is people say the BBC did this and the BBC did that about that Panorama documentary, but it was actually made by an independent company. It wasn't the BBC that did it.
Right.
It was, I think, October Films, I think. Nobody ever seems to say that for some reason. I don't know why.
Interesting. Yeah, nobody seems to say that Israel's committing war crimes on the telly.
They don't very often on the BBC, no. There's actually the World at One a couple of days ago. I think Sarah Montague is in Israel and the West Bank, and there was a very good, most of the World at One on like Tuesday seemed to be a report from the West Bank about settler violence. It wasn't bad for once.
Nice.
That's good.
Yeah,
it's harder for them to escape it now, isn't it? To try and pretend it's not happening.
Well, the West Bank, yeah, I mean, yeah, the West Bank is such an obvious example of ethnic cleansing. But at least it was, you know, the BBC, because then they kind of reverted to they led yesterday with the Metropolitan Police and the Greater Manchester Police saying that they were going to. Anybody who says the word intifada is going to, ow, ooh, ow, get out. That was quick. the Metropolitan Police just stormed into my house. And I said the word intifada, ow, ooh, ow, get off, ow. Say if anybody on a demonstration says the word intifada, will be hauled out and arrested, you know, which apparently is legally completely baseless, but it's just kind of sopped to the Israel lobby, isn't it, really? Trying to make a link between anti-Zionism and protesting against the genocide and the murders in Sydney.
Yeah.
An illegitimate link thereof.
Yeah, those Bondi bastards did provide a bit of a setback
it's
very annoying, but it was also confusing. You know how many times I've actually fantasized about, like, if I was ever present at some sort of terrorist attack perpetrated by a Muslim, I will go running in and tackle the person, because I want the news to see an Arab person taking down the, you know, I've fantasized about, honestly, because this is such a big part of an Arab person's life, is seeing these fucking things happen and just waiting for the news of who did it. Oh, shit, it's an Arab. And I've fantasized so many times of taking out that person so that the news had an opposite. And now it's actually happened.
Yeah.
It's the most Arab name, and he's got it twice, Ahmed al-Ahmed.
Yeah.
And it's still depressing to see. But
yeah, they tried. Well, I mean, they had to.
It's a weird feeling. It's a very unique and weird feeling.
A fake news source said that his name was Edward Crabtree.
Yes.
Yeah. There was a fake news site. They got picked up, obviously, by all the social media retweeters. And they said his real name is Edward Crabtree. It's a very specific, strangely specific name to choose.
It lends it more veracity by being so specific.
Yeah. But I found that quite funny. Yeah. they have to pick a name.
Yeah, and then Netanyahu said at first he was Jewish, didn't he? Trying to.
Yeah. it's all up for grabs now. You can just say and believe whatever you want. This is something I'm trying to find a way. It's hard to write comedy about this, but there is a truth. There is this sort of objective truth out there, and we are departing from it every day. We stray further from the truth. And there's something quite interesting and juicy there to sort of think about.
Well, how's your year in comedy been? You were Edinburgh.
Yeah, my year in comedy was very eventful. I had my show, you came to see an early version of it back in May, and then I developed it further, went to Edinburgh. We got a very late confirmation for Edinburgh. We had about 4 weeks notice, and we got confirmation for a 115-seater. We were terrified because it's hard enough to sell at Edinburgh, even if you have a good run-up. We sold out over half the run. We sold over 2,000 tickets, and I won two awards, some great broadsheet reviews, a few different interviews, which was nice. A very funny attempted takedown by the Spectator, which was pretty. It was funny. It was funny. It was in a
deliberately funny or.
No. It was a very small man whose name I forget.
He was Diddy.
His name was Sean Puffy Coombs, and he was right. He had this compilation, and the title of the article was like 10 disgruntled woke comedians or some shit. Right. And I had a whole paragraph to myself in my show where he consistently, aww, every other sentence is something that's factually incorrect about me. And what's funny, aww, is my PR reached out to them saying, hey, say what you can have your opinions. That's fine. Just you have to fix the factually incorrect things about Sammy's childhood and where he was born and all this kind of stuff. And the editor then replied to her within 24 hours, a very long email describing exactly why they were not going to put factually correct information in the article.
So we Michael clearly, Gove
no, I wish it was Michael Gove. Oh, no. It was some genuinely very forgettable name, very forgettable man.
Andrew Crabtree. But,
it's Ahmed El Ahmed, actually. So we clearly rattled them. It was quite a good feeling because this guy's boss took the time out of his day to write a lengthy email in response as to why they weren't going to publish facts.
Jesus Christ.
Which was, well, I counted it as a bit of a win, to be honest, because I mean, Spectator readers, you know, when they gather the single brain cell they have between them, you know, they can just about muster up enough sort of thought to finish an article in that publication. But so I'm not too bothered about, you know, the people who read The Spectator and what their opinion is. So it was just, it was nice. It was a nice feeling to rattle them because they have nothing else to go on. It was a good feeling because it's like all you have now are your lies. So that was nice.
Good. I should publicize that. I actually, the Spectator headquarters used to be in my street for years, and they used to invite me every year to the Spectator Christmas party. I think it was summer party, which I used to go to, really. I think this was, it's inconceivable time. It was kind of like, a bit like, you know, the Christmas, you know, it didn't seem to matter whether you were left or right in those days, really.
Yeah, yeah.
We mixed freely. It was a bit like the armistice at Christmas and the First World War when the men from
you had a
British
football match,
and the German trenches, played football and danced with each other. But it was the most, cars used to pull up and disgorge. I think it must have been during Thatcher era. I mean, she was never there, but a lot of her ministers were. It was the most extraordinary drunken party I've ever been to. Just spirits were served in massive measures, really. So you would see various Tory grandees. And there was also the sort of comedy establishment back then, people like Miles Kington. It was actually quite nice. And Jeffrey Bernard. I remember Miles Kington coming back from the bar, and all ashen-faced. And he said, Jeffrey Bernard has said, I just saw you calling me a cunt on the television. then Jeffrey Bernard would be there every year, gradually missing a limb as each one was chopped off with, because, you know, his alcoholism really hopping about on one.
Oh, literally. I thought you meant metaphorically.
No, literally. No,
he would have his appendages,
various limbs because removed. Of his smoking and his and his drinking over the years, really. Yeah, so yeah, I went for a few years, and then I went 1 year and just thought this isn't funny anymore.
would you have gone on TV and called him a cunt after he had his limbs removed, or am I getting guys mixed up?
I think that would be that. No, I would never. I mean, I did. Yeah, you know, there was a play in the West End for a while with Peter O'Toole and what was her name? I can't remember her name now. About being locked in. It was called Jeffrey Bernard is Unwell, and it was written by Keith Waterhouse, I think, and it was about, the set was the Coach and Horses which is on Old Compton Street. It's in the corner of Old Compton Street and Dean Street. The set was the Coach, and then you could go for a drink in the Coach and Horses afterwards. But it was about Jeffrey Bernard being locked in the Coach and Horses overnight. And it was a play which was having a laugh about alcoholism, really. I remember a lot of American tourists being amused about it. But I remember we went to see it, and sitting in front of us was Keanu Reeves.
Wow.
And I remember Keanu Reeves saying, I don't know whether he was with Alex Winter, I don't know if it was Bill and Ted, it may have been. Keanu Reeves went back at the interval, you know, went to see, and he said, "Dude, we're going to meet Lawrence of Arabia."
That's funny. Is this pre or post Matrix, Keanu Reeves?
Pre.
Must be pre.
Pre-Matrix, yeah. But he was a big deal.
This
he
is,
did
this
point
is 1999. The TV movie was made in 1999, so I imagine the play was running before
Jeffrey
that.
Bernard, yeah, it was made in.
Matrix is from 1999 as well. But
it was pre-Matrix, I think, but it was still
Sarah Berger and Annabelle Leventon were in it.
They went in the play. The play was... I can't remember now. But, yeah, that was the spectator party anyway, and then they stopped inviting me, and then they moved. Or
why do you think they stopped inviting you?
I don't think they thought it was funny anymore either, really. The joke of me being there had kind of worn off for all of us, I think. And then they moved from Doughty Street, they moved to Victoria or somewhere. But it's also, you know, where I would stop, and sometimes Boris Johnson was the editor, and I would stop and chat to him.
Oh, right. Well, what was he like back then? Exactly the same.
It was hard to, I did it. I got a bit out of it, really, which was he was all right. I mean, I did a bit. I think my first stand up show when I came back to doing stand up about just being seduced by his kind of upper class charm.
Yeah.
And sort of go, "Oh, Mr. Johnson, oh, your golden hair, Mr. Johnson. Oh, insult me in Latin, Mr. Johnson. Oh." And then developing this fantasy of being in the First World War and Boris being my my officer. He didn't seem, you know, again, he seemed like, again, it was part, it seemed a bit of a joke, really. I remember, but the first time I met him, I had a Nivola blue Alfa Romeo 166, which was a very distinctive looking car. Absolute nightmare to drive. Anyway, it was parked on the square, and as I was going up the square, I saw Boris Johnson, because he wrote about cars for Esquire, and I saw him, he was sitting on the roof of a Mercedes S-Class with his feet sticking through the sunroof, as it were. So his feet were in the car and the rest of him was on the roof. And so I pulled up in my Alfa Romeo, said, "Oh, hello." And he said, "Oh, that's yours, is it?" He'd noticed it. Then we had a chat. And then I met him on the street one. And then I don't know if anybody is interested in this, but yeah, I remember he said he was reviewing a Saab convertible. And I said, "You know, that's just a Vauxhall Vectra underneath. Saabs are basically." And he said, "Oh, no, really." And he got out a leaky fountain pen and made some notes to that effect.
Ooh.
On a piece of paper. So I helped him write his motoring column.
Nothing wrong with the Vauxhall.
Vauxhall Vectra. No, it was fine for
Alfa Romeo's, my sister's fiance back in the 90s had an Alfa Romeo, and all I remember about it was he had to wake up extra early in the morning in the winter to warm it up. That was a thing back in the night. You had to warm your car up.
Yeah.
You don't have to do that anymore.
No. You had to warm it up for it to start, kind of thing.
Or, yeah. So, well, yeah. As in, I remember him trying to start it.
No, or if your windows are like frosted over as well, it's like to get the heat, to get the air hot, takes a while.
My 166, it would drain it. If I left it for a week, the battery would be flat.
Yeah.
It just drained about. So in the end, I had an isolation switch fitted. And seeing as we're on this tack, I also drove, well, the movie I made called Thief Lord in Luxembourg, I drove there in an Alfa Romeo coupe.
Drove all the way, you drove to Luxembourg?
Yeah.
What, they couldn't afford a bloody ticket for you? Yeah.
No, because obviously I wrote about it, and then a photographer flew out and took photos of me.
It's called Thief Lord Herder Dieber. Is it British family drama film?
Yes. It was written by Cornelia Funk, the German J.K. Rowling.
And this is where you became like a father figure to Aaron Taylor Johnson.
And the guy, the kid from 1917, what's he called? George
McKay.
George McKay, yeah. Also, he was in it as well. And Aaron Taylor Johnson, yeah, they were both.
And you played Barbarossa.
Barbarossa.
Wow.
The Thief Lord.
There's a tremendous number of programs now. This is on the television where people buy cars and do them up and then sell them at a tremendous loss. And I don't understand. The first one was Mike Brewer, who did Wheeler Dealers. He should be very annoyed because there's hundreds of them now. But one of the things also that the people in them who are selling cars or buying cars, I will have to all have to indulge in banter. Self-deprecating banter, which I don't know whether that's a very British thing, really. They've all got, and then laugh kind of falsely about their deficiencies.
It started with Top Gear and the Clarkson's sort of.
Yeah, that was slightly different. These are real-ish people really buying cars at auction or selling cars. Right.
Is it like masculine macho banter?
No, I think it's some kind of, they feel compelled to do it. I don't know what it is, really. I'm throwing this out there. I'm trying to think of a bit, really, if I'm honest. But I don't know. They just kind of have to go, look at him. He's stupid. He's drinking his tea upside down. They say things like that. You know, they sort of say, mechanics and, look at this. It's a... look at his car.
He needs to wake up early in the morning to warm it up in the winter.
Yeah, he needs to wake up, or his battery drains. Or he's got Boris Johnson on his roof. look at him. I don't know. It seems to be some kind of requirement of British people in these lightweight documentaries to make fun of themselves or their workmates. They feel compelled. Nobody's telling them to do it. They feel compelled to do it. And I don't know why, really. Nobody's serious. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nobody says,
It could just be a case of just filling that runtime. You know, don't edit it out. We need to fill 60 minutes. Like, just keep it in. Fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Or they just really want to have some sort of personality when, in fact, they are incapable. I do miss Pimp My Ride as well.
Oh, right. That was a different thing again. I think that was when I was out all the time. I never really saw it. That was like MTV. Was that MTV?
MTV, yeah. And then they would like refurbish someone's car, but in like a very inappropriate and kind of impractical way.
Right.
They'd like take someone's beaten up old Ford Galaxy and then they'd put make it look really flashy, new chairs, new paint job and everything, but then they'd always put something in the boot, like a fucking aquarium in the boot.
Yeah.
Or like a ping pong table that comes out of the boot, and they'd always put some novelty, oversized thing that just renders the boot unusable for its intended purpose. They'd be like, oh, we've put a complete three-bedroom bungalow in your boot. All you have to do is press this button and you wait half an hour for the mechanism to unfurl this bungalow. And sit there.
And a family of four comes out.
Yeah.
And that was popular, was it?
Extremely popular.
Yeah, yeah.
Exhibit hosted the American one. And then this really popular guy, Tim Westwood, hosted the British one.
Tim Westwood, there's some fertile shit. I mean, I always thought, even before the allegations, that, you know, that's also typical, like the self-deprecating banter, that is also typical of Britain, isn't it? That Britain, obviously, the BBC felt that they needed to respond to the wave of hip-hop and gangster rap and so on. So they appointed as the kind of arbiter of taste in his late night show, the son of a fucking bishop who'd been to public school. I mean, Tim Westwood, with his fake American accent.
Yeah.
He's like fake, you know.
My brother's had some interactions with him, and he's not a pleasant person.
Really?
And he could tell long before any of the accusations.
Somebody shot him, didn't they, a while back?
Someone shot Tim Westwood?
Yeah, before all the stuff came out about him, yeah, somebody shot him.
Which probably just gave him more street cred.
I guess, yeah, maybe he had himself shot. But I just think that typical of fucking Britain. Yeah, he was shot,
fucking hell, again in 1999.
That was a busy year.
Gangland.
I think it was Puff Daddy arranged his shooting.
Possible. Or Puff Diddy. Or Ken Puff Diddy.
Ken Diddy.
Ken Puff Diddy. Yeah, he was strapped. Doddy was often BBC, like entertainment Christmas party. Doddy was always strapped. I always had a nine underneath.
Yeah. How tickling.
Bam. Tickling stick and a. in.
Oh my God.
Cold Python.
Two men on a motorbike pulled alongside Tim Westwood's Range Rover. So he got a Fiat Punto underneath that Range Rover. As he drove through Kennington, South London on Sunday evening, shortly after he performed at Lambeth Country Festival at Brockwell Park, which we've spoken about. It's at the end of my road there. And they tried to assassinate him. Yardies. Probably for faking their accents.
there's been a spate of white English guys who have made a career out of basically putting on a Jamaican patois.
Yeah, who's that ginger guy who speaks Jamaican?
There's a couple. There's M.R. who's done very well out of it.
Yeah.
And there's another one, a guy online.
Blood cop, pussy, you're not Jamaican, I'm Jamaican. I saw him debating a Jamaican on this YouTube. Yeah. He just kept calling him a pussy. It's like, dude, you're the white guy who's speaking like a
Jamaican. This isn't a joke. They're just...
No, he's like, I had Jamaican friends all my life. So I just speak like that.
Well, I think it's interesting. It's not so much that he's doing it for me. It's that it's the amount of success that they get. It says a lot about what the industry is like. You know, it's everything around it. Often with these things, you get, you know, someone will do something. It's, you know, not great. But the question that's never asked is not like, you know, oh, you know, why did this person do this? It's the question that's never asked is, you know, what about everyone around them who facilitated this? Those people, that group always get away with it, don't they? They never, people want something to sacrifice.
No, it's true. They go from project to project, strengthened. But it's unusual relatively unusual shooting in Britain, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yardies. Can I do my... I don't know if I did. I think I did it on Sandwich Bar. I do. You know, there was the moral panic about Yardies, wasn't there, in the 80s and 90s? And they're actually the film Predator 2.
Oh, yeah.
Which stars Danny Glover. But he goes and sees the head of the Yardies in Los Angeles, King Willie, who is aware that the Predator is amongst them, and King Willie says, there ain't no killing what can't be killed. There ain't no stopping what can't be stopped. This is dread, man, truly dread.
This was set in, where was the RD, where was that in
Los
London?
Angeles. It's set during a heat wave in Los Angeles.
It's such a good film. And then there's a voodoo element to it as well.
I think Kim Welly is kind of, also voodoo as well,
Isn't that mixing up Yardies, Jamaica and New Orleans, and throwing voodoo in there?
Probably. Well, Hollywood is not, no respecter of...
They're well known for deeply researching the cultures that they represent.
I do like that. I do often think, though, when the co-op has run out of pita bread, I think, there ain't no killing. What this is. This is dread, man. Truly dread.
I'll never approve co-op pita bread.
You'll never approve of it, no.
Supermarket.
You can make it work if you just put a little bit of water on it, put it under the grill. You can make it work.
Mm. That's a good tip. Thank you for that.
Tiny bit of water, hot grill, a couple of minutes, and it gets moist. And it
just
sometimes
go
it
to your Turkish or Arabic supermarket. Go to the bread section. Yeah. You'll get three packets for a pound. Put two in the freezer. You're fucking sorted for pita bread for the next few weeks, mate. Chuck it straight on the hob. Toast it on the hob over real flame. Splash water on it first.
Not everybody has that, that...
upsets me. Favorite supermarket hummus. Go.
Delphi.
No, own brand supermarket. Which supermarket makes the best tasting?
Probably Waitrose.
Yeah, Waitrose.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't really like supermarket hummus very much.
It's generally not that good.
Yeah.
I need to go and speak to all the Algerian shops in Finsbury Park in a couple of weeks because I've got my show at Finsbury Park Theatre. At the Park Theatre.
Oh, nice little theatre.
End of Jan. Yeah, I've got 11 nights at the Park Theatre. So
cool.
There's a really big Algerian community around there.
Yes.
A big part of my show is talking about Algeria and the Algerian resistance. And so I'm going to go and have a chat with those guys and see if they'd be up for spreading the word.
How are you going to get them all together? Is there a meeting of the Algerian Grocers Association that we would do that thing where you send them a thing saying they've all won a boat.
Yeah.
And then when they turn up to pick it up, it's just you.
It's me. I have gathered you here today. I think I'm just going to go door to door.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But that's not a bad shout. I should advertise an event, maybe put on an event to get
a live screen, an outdoor screening of Battle of Algiers.
Yeah, that's not a bad shout.
Put some posters up in the shops, in their shops.
Yeah, that's probably what I'm going to do and buy some of their amazing food.
Pita bread.
And say hi. I'm going to be buying a lot of pita bread.
That's a fun day out.
Yeah, I think it'll be nice.
Tell me when you go. I'll come with you. Maybe we'll film some content of chatting with the Algerians.
Is your Arabic and their Arabic compatible?
They understand my Arabic. Yeah. I don't. I understand Algerians. Algerians for me are in terms of not including Egyptians, North Africans, just because I understand Egyptian Arabic broadly. But when you go west of Egypt, it changes the Arabic.
Quite dramatically.
It does change quite dramatically. I think Algerians are the ones, is the dialect I understand most easily, I'd say. And I think Moroccan is the most difficult because, it's really, really hard. It's almost, it's called Darija. It's almost like a different language. There's different vocabulary as well, but it's the same grammatical structure. And so they understand a lot of sort of Palestinian and Lebanese, Syrian sort of Bilad al-Sham languages. But we don't always understand them. It's like a little mini form of colonialism, basically. It's the Arab colonialism, which Arabs don't like talking about.
Really?
Yeah.
But it's also a bit of a mind. I'm a terrible serial. If I know a couple of words of any language, I will use them, really. But then with Arabic, they don't know that I'm not from somewhere like Yemen or...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Nigeria or somewhere, I don't know, somewhere where these people speak Arabic. So they so they always think I am Arabic. If I just say shukran,
yeah,
you know, afwan, and, you know, they say, but esu Arabi or whatever it is, are you Arabic?
Etu Arabi.
Etu. I don't know, what is it?
The Arabi? I suppose it's quite similar, actually.
Yeah.
I was at a wedding last night of a friend of mine who has an Algerian mother, and there were relatives there. I was looking at a couple of guys and I was like, you could be an Algerian sort of uncle or you could be a geezer from Essex. I couldn't tell. It was impossible to tell until I went and spoke to them. Because Algeria is Mediterranean. I mean, it's all Mediterranean culture, really. So it's,
yeah, you know,
everyone around the Mediterranean kind of looks the same. It was really interesting. Yeah, went to my first lesbian wedding last night. It was really fun.
Oh man, I went really. Actually, yeah. I was going to say I went to a lesbian wedding in the 90s, I think, in Bournemouth. Actually, no, it wasn't. No, the couple getting married weren't lesbians. No. Maybe I'll forget about that. congratulations. How was it?
Yeah, congrats.
Thank you.
Get off with anybody.
I couldn't. No. It was so, because I think, you know, once people are sort of openly expressing who they are in that way, there's no room for you know, the sort of the tension or uppertiness or stress of a lot of kinds of weddings I've been to. I've definitely been to weddings that have had an unspoken tension in the air for an unknown reason.
Yeah.
And it was the opposite of that. It was one of the best weddings I've ever been to. It was very loving and friendly and relaxed and everyone just got on. And then we danced and a friend of mine brought a dirbeka, a tabla, the Arabic drum. He played, you know him, Karim Samara. You know him, Talal Karim. You know Karim?
No.
Okay, fine. And then I had a go on the drum as well, and it was really fun, and everyone was dancing, and it was fantastic, really, really beautiful.
Good. I have been to a lesbian wedding. It was about 5 years ago. I think it was in Hampshire or somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pioneer, Alexi. You're a pioneer.
Yeah, it's not that. Not that. Not that sort of innovative, really.
Respect, shout out to all our lesbian listeners.
Yeah,
out
all
there.
The lesbian listeners.
Big ups and
yeah.
Big ups and enjoy. Have good weddings. Enjoy your weddings.
Yeah, it was a
Where are they going on honeymoon?
Oh, I didn't ask her that. Actually, I should have. I didn't even think to ask.
Where did you go on your honeymoon, Alexi?
We didn't really have a honeymoon. We went to Greece, I think, the year after. We didn't really have a honeymoon.
Which part of Greece?
We flew into Athens and then went to an island whose name I can't remember.
Lesbos.
Ithikos.
No.
D-I-D-D-Y. We are the Diddy men. Dotty's Dotty Diddy men. We are the Diddy men who always have a bash. We're full of Diddy joys. We make gay and Diddy noise. We are the Diddy men who come from naughty ash.
Yeah, I thought, thank you. Yeah, the energy was definitely slipping there, wasn't it?
Is one of them a bit racist? It looks like one of them's wearing a turban. One of the Diddy men's wearing like a turban style.
It was a different time, Talal. You can't judge Ken Dodd on the values of today. Okay, he's That's a national fair. Treasure.
No,
yeah, fine. He might have made a few racist puppets, but you got to look at his work as a whole.
That's what I was going to say as well. That, of course, this is a little known fact, but the Top of the fair. Pops.
Yeah.
Was actually produced, came out of the light entertainment department. It was under. So if you were a comic, you had a novelty song out, you were always guaranteed a slot on the Pops, which of course was very powerful in those days. And I, for example, was on the Pops twice at my novelty hit, or my hit, Hello, John Got a New Motor. So Ken Dodd also, a lot of Ken Dodd had a string of hits, really. Because you could always get on if you always get on the Top of the Pops if you were
entertainment star of
the BBC. His biggest one was Happiness. Happiness, happiness, the greatest gift that I possess. I thank the Lord
because I've been blessed
more than my share of happiness.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
What songs did you have on?
Well, just a lot of John Got a New Motor, really. A lot of John Got a New Motor.
Oh, you went on twice with that same song?
I was on live once, and then they played the video once.
Okay.
Radio 1 wouldn't play it at all. Radio 1 only played it a maximum of 9 times, just they had to play it because it was in the charts. Radio 1 hated it. But it didn't matter because I was a star of BBC Light Entertainment, so I was on Top of the Pops. So fuck you, Radio 1.
That's right.
Tim Westwood fuck you, Radio 1. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tim Westwood should try and do some stand-up comedy.
That's yeah, maybe get do. Back in.
See if he can. I think it was a simpler time back then, wasn't it? The comedy, I've spoken to you about this before, Alexi, but it's. I feel like I've been out of the comedy scene for a couple of years, sort of, but I've still been doing comedy. I've just not been paying attention.
Right.
And even in the last 2 or 3 years, things have changed drastically. And I'm sort of having to sort of learn how it all works now in terms of the industry and what people are watching, what people are listening to, and
what's changed. Tell me what's changed.
I think it's just gone. It started in 2020, but it's gone fully online now. If you're not an online comedian, you're not a comedian. And really? I resisted online for so long. I didn't have an Instagram account until 2020. I didn't know what Instagram was when everyone, and it was blissful. It was amazing. It was peaceful not having to engage with that crap.
Yeah.
And now you have to engage. We have all become the unpaid labor force of Mark Zuckerberg. Yeah. We all work for Zuckerberg now. Even if, you know, no matter what you do, if you're a professional content uploader, you're uploading content for free, and Meta is making money off the ads, and it's we're all just happy. We're all just happy to do it. It's a bit depressing, but it is what it is. It's hard to talk about it without sounding like an embittered, embittered comedian. But it's changed so much, and I think another thing you're seeing is you're seeing comedians with really large followings who then will book either a spot or will have a full show and sell out a tour and make a lot of money, but they haven't done their time. And they're not there, are they? And that's what we felt
very much about Sammy Obey, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah. And I've still not seen his stuff live, but it's getting depressing. That's what it is. It's not even about individual comedians. It's getting really depressing. You know, it's like, what do we have to do now? You know, you have to film your stand up and then put it online for free, and then everyone has to see
it. I mean, people I know, producers and stuff, they say a lot of these online people, which does sound like old geezers, man, but they don't have the craft to do it live. Really, they can't do it live, you know, because it's a very specific skill. Stand up comedy.
It takes years to hold as well. You can't just step on a stage.
No, it's true. You have to learn.
Well, it came pretty naturally for me, actually. Kind of did it straight away.
But it's changed. Yeah, it's drastically changed. And it's a different game.
It is weird. And like back in the day, you wouldn't have to prolifically write material. You wouldn't have to change your set every month, you know.
Well, the old time comics used the same material of their old life, didn't they? Had 1 hour or 120 minutes, which they'd tour forever. I mean, literally forever. I noticed, Red Richardson, son of Peter Richardson, the comic strip, is doing adverts for gambling for Red Casino. So I don't know whether he got extra for selling his name. He has a big online presence.
I didn't know he was Peter Richardson's.
Yes, he keeps it quiet, really.
Yeah,
it's good for him, really. But he's
Also
married to Rick Mayall's daughter.
Really? Oh, wow. Did you know Rick Mayall?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. I wish I got to meet him.
Question. You come on here, Alexei Popov.
Who knows who? Who knows who?
Famously,
he doesn't. He didn't know.
Rick Mail.
Dodd. He didn't know Diddly Dodd.
Yeah, Rick didn't.
I shouldn't call it. I don't want to.
Yeah, no, me and Rick started out at the same time together. And we did the almost together.
And yeah, I really wish I got to meet Rick Mail.
I did a Gaza benefit a few weeks ago with Mitch Benn, and Mitch Benn is organizing has several venues at the, I can announce this, the Rick Mail Festival in Droitwich, which Rick Mail's hometown. I'm going to do some stuff there. In the
very nice.
Yeah. Me and Nigel, I think,
that's separately nice. Together.
Yeah, I thought, why not? You know, Droitwich, home of Kevin Turvey.
How's your cat, Dalal? How's Claude?
So I've had to readopt my old cat. He's 14 years old. I've had him since he was a baby. I moved out of my mum's house a few years back and couldn't take the cat with because landlords don't really like that sort of thing. But my mum recently threatened to break his neck if I don't come and take the cat. And so we now in my one bedroom flat have a...
I have a cat. Well,
almost incontinent aged cat. And he's beautiful, and we've trained him up. He's not pooing on the floor every day anymore. He's meowing at me all throughout this recording. He's been meowing at me. He's very hungry, but he's doing very well.
I can't hear it. That's
can
you show him to us? Can you bring him up? Can I say hello?
Come here, boy. Come here.
Good. Have you met Claude, Alexei?
Not in person, no, only over the...
It's a very good cat.
Hello.
Looks
like my cat, Tiger.
Yeah, he's great.
Pocho, Pocho, Pocho. Oh, there's a good boy. Say hello to the podcast.
Hello, Claude.
Hello, Claude.
Claude.
He can't... I'm trying to put the headphones on him. Okay, say hello.
Hello, Claude.
He needs the monitors on, otherwise he's not. He's a professional sound guy.
Poor guy. That was very intolerant of all that bullshit. Yeah, he's still right here next to me. He hasn't run away.
So also related to that conversation, and it was also something I was listening to on the radio this morning, which I knew about anyway, is these micro dramas. You know, they started out in China, and they're filmed in the phone format.
Yeah.
Vertical, yeah. And
I've not seen any of these, but I keep hearing this fucking word. Yes, carry on.
So we could do micro podcasts. I thought 2-minute podcasts. So we'd just sort of consistently going, yeah, I used to have an Alfa Romeo, and then that'd be it. even less satisfying than the normal podcast, which people seem to have been enjoying recently for some reason. I don't know.
The micro dramas, I saw one when they first started coming out, and because they have to keep your attention, there's a massive plot twist every 10 seconds,
right?
Because you just have to keep, they have to keep you watching, and it's like the end, it's the end stage of the internet. It's because there are so many plot twists, it becomes meaningless,
right?
But you can't stop watching.
Where do you watch them?
I can't. They just got fed to me on Instagram about a year ago.
Oh, they're on Insta. I've never seen one ever.
And yeah, it was intriguing. But it's part of this thing of, you know, everything's a bit shit now. Where it's like you can't sit down and just absorb a well constructed, masterful piece of art over an hour. It's everything's trying to keep your attention.
Well, I've just finished my second term of an acting class I've been taking part in, just to kind of, you know, keep it fresh. And all my castmates are like 20, 21. They're all like drama school doing this extracurricular thing. And they're all like talking as if verticals, they're like a big thing. They're getting paid well to do them.
No, they're doing them. Because they've come out of China, but they're sort of spreading now around.
Oh, yeah. while I was there, one of them was like, I want to tell everyone something. I got a role in a vertical. And everyone was like, congrats, nice one, patting him on the back. Wow. And I'm like sitting there, my 38-year-old ass going, what the fuck is a vertical?
I would have known.
And I have to say, I'm sorry, I feel guilty when Claude comes up. I want to give a shout out to our fallen comrade, Wilf. He is the podcast cat, and he will always be the podcast's cat. So
thank you.
I love and miss Wilf dearly.
We all do.
I'm not trying to steal his valor.
No, that's okay, Claude. That's okay.
Look, we have to wrap up. I have a question to ask both of you, but maybe Sammy can provide some inspiration here. I have an important thing we need to discuss before we wrap up the podcast. But before that, I just want to quickly promote the Patreon. Please, dear listeners, comrades, and friends and lovers, please go to patreon.com/AlexisSaleHPodcast. What was that, Sammy? What website?
Patreon.com/AlexisSaleHPodcast.
I didn't hear it. Alexi, what was it? What was the website?
AlexisSaleHPodcast/Patreon.
Exactly. Patreon. If you head over there, you can support the show for like £3 a month, £5 a month, 10, 20. And you get access to full video episodes. You get to see Sammy Wardes, Sammy Abu Wardrobe's mustache in the flesh on your screen. You get
4K.
Full video episodes. You get to watch Alexi, Lisa, and Nigel watching The Young Ones, which starred Rick Mayall and Alexi Sale, which they both made their break from, Sammy. And you get to see Alexi shooting guns, all sorts of cool stuff. I'll put a picture of my cat up there, and you'll just be supporting this Marxist podcast, which will never have an advert on it. If I ever put an advert on this fucking podcast, I'll eat my cat. I love you. Please support the show. It means a lot. Pays the bills. Pays my rent. Love you. Thank you. Bye bye.
Now,
the question I have, that was patreon.com/AlexisSaleHPodcast. Question I have is Christmas coming up. Normally on Christmas Day, we put out a podcast for all our listeners and for anyone who doesn't do Christmas, like a lot of people I'm very close to, like people who don't have people to hang out with on Christmas, we put out a little pod. What should we do this year? We're going to record probably tomorrow for like half an hour, 15 minutes. Any ideas what we can do? What kind of
what
novelty?
What do we usually do? I've got a complete...
We've done one where you read out... you did a Christmas message, kind of. It was like a
Hallmark. Has Amnesty been in touch with you? Because I did that Christmas alternative Christmas message for Amnesty.
No, they haven't been
still
in
haven't
touch.
Been, I don't know what they are. Never mind.
You could sing some carols.
Yeah.
You could.
Herald angel, sing glory to the newborn king.
Peace we do? On earth, save it.
Mercy.
Okay, you're giving it away. You need to wait.
You have a beautiful singing voice, Alexi.
But I am one of the few Jews who knows like lots of, because my mother, you know, I was going into school like in my fifth year or something. I saw all these kids hanging about in a classroom, and I was late. Anyway, I said, "Who were those kids?" And they said, "Those are the Jews," and they were excused assembly and could come in late. Because they were Jewish. And I said to my mum, why didn't you tell them I'm Jewish? She said, I didn't want you to feel left out.
I have a story about that. I went to school very briefly in London for a year or so when I was a young boy. I was about 6 or 7 years old. And first of all, I found it very strange. Strange that in the UK, in the state schools, you go to school in the morning, then you sing Christian hymns in the morning. That was odd, but it was fine. I was very happy to get involved. But there were these meatballs in the school lunch. There were these meatballs they were so, so tasty. They had ketchup injected into the core.
Wow.
And they had a crust. And they were my favorite meal for lunch. And then one day I queue up and I say, can I have the meatballs, please? And the dinner lady says, what's your name? And I say, my name's Sammy. She, is it Sammy Abu Wardrobe. I say, yes. She says, you're not allowed. You're not allowed this. And I say, why? She says, because you're Muslim. And I said, well, I've been eating them this whole time. Like, what's, yeah. like, you know, like, if I'm going to hell, I'm going to hell.
Yeah.
If you're going to hell, you're going to hell. Let's just carry on. You know, let's just pretend nobody ever said anything and continue. But she refused. She refused to feed me the really tasty pork meatballs because they had pork in them. Maybe the ketchup as well. Who knows? But
she was just assuming.
No, I think she got a notification somehow that I'm a Muslim.
That's fucked.
So I'm not allowed my favorite meatballs.
I would have kicked off, mate.
The thing is, if she had just said nothing, I would have remained innocent, right?
And you would have gone to heaven.
Ignorant. I would have been ignorant of what I was eating.
But instead, you're pignorant.
And yeah, right. It is what it is.
Do you know lots of Christian hymns, then, or you went there long enough to?
Yeah, no, I know.
All things bright and beautiful.
Creatures shepherds small. Wash their socks by night. What is it?
Oh yeah, that's a carol, really. I think.
Yeah, the shepherds and their flocks.
All seated round the.
I just remember Christ a lot.
there would be really.
We three kings of Orient are. Trying to smoke a rubber cigar. It was loaded and exploded. And then we did a Jewish one at school. Shalom, my friend. Shalom, shalom. Shalom, my friend. Shalom.
That doesn't sound like a traditional Jewish. That sounds like a modern writing.
We had a bit in the 60s in Liverpool. We had a Beatles one. We three Beatles from Liverpool are John and the... On a bicycle, George in a car, something on a thing, George on a bicycle. I can't remember now. George on a bicycle, following Ringo Starr.
Good one.
Four Beatles from Liverpool.
Religious hymn from Liverpool.
My
mum babysat Paul McCartney's little sister, I think.
Really?
Yeah, she saw him a couple of times, but then he got famous very quickly, so she stopped seeing him, and she left the country.
Guys, we don't have time for this.
All right.
What should we do for our Christmas episode? Are we going to sing hymns?
Let me just plug my show just for a second.
All right.
My show is on Peace the Resistance. It's sold out for 6 nights in London, sold over 2,000 tickets in the Edinburgh Fringe. And has had rave reviews, won 2 awards. It's your chance to see it at the Park Theatre in Finsbury Park, January 29th to February 7th. Get your tickets before it sells out.
Please. It's such a good fucking show. Sammy is a master. Yeah. It's such a good fucking show.
Indeed. Why don't we just do the Christmas... We record the Christmas show and see what happens.
Okay,
tomorrow
we'll see what happens.
Yes, we'll see what happens.
Put a Santa hat on. And
it's fairly close to Christmas. Not like
open
jewels.
A stocking. Why don't you each fill a stocking for each other, send it to each other's houses, and then open it and talk through the gifts you've given each other.
Okay.
Shit, if only I had that kind of planning. That's such a good one. Good idea. Next year we'll do that. We'd have time to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
You're itching to stop this, so...
We have to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, because David Diddy Hamilton's coming on next. We've got a handover to the lunchtime guys, the lunchtime crew on Podcast FM. Whee!
Featuring Sean Coombs, Sean Marky Puffy Coombs. Mark,
Tim Westwood and Ken Dodd. And Aaron Taylor-Johnson.
George afternoon suit. Yeah. All right. Bye-bye, everybody. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
You've been listening to the Alexis L podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkouti. Music by Tarbush Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexislpodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.